Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the IDFC First Bank Q1 FY25 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Chintan Shah. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sejal. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Q1 FY25 earnings conference call for IDFC First Bank. We have with us from the senior management, Mr. V. Vaidyanathan, Managing Director and CEO, along with the senior management team. So without further delay, I would now like to hand over the floor to the management. Thank you, and over to you, Vaidyanathan, sir.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. This is Vaidyanathan here.
Good evening, everyone. This is Sudhanshu Jain. I'm the CFO.
Hi, this is Saptarshi Bapari, the head IR.
So there's Saptarshi, Sudhanshu, and myself. First of all, thank you very much for joining us on a Saturday evening. We put out our results maybe a couple of hours ago. We hope you have had the opportunity of going through the presentation. We'd like to definitely talk about all the key items of this quarter, and certainly later in the conversation, we'll come to cost-income ratio. We'll talk about credit cost, which has gone up this quarter, and I'm conscious of that. We'll go through that. But just since the sequence of this presentation, which we put out for you to review, let's just go through some numbers which we think are important, and then we'll definitely come to the points which I'd imagine more critical items. Now, the way we look at it is that for any bank, and certainly for our bank, raising deposits is the key capability that we need to have because this is just raw material. And I'm very happy to say that our deposits momentum continues through this quarter. And just to run you past some numbers, now our deposit numbers are now touching about rupees 2 lakh crores, which we think is pretty much a landmark number for us because we started with a pretty low base. And even last year itself, our deposit YOY has grown by 38%. Then when we look to the retail deposits, that's also coming very strong for us. Our retail deposits have grown from March 2023 to March, pardon me, from June 2023 to June 2024, has grown by 44%. And in fact, we got rather emboldened by this kind of deposit inflow that is coming to our bank, and that we actually reduced the interest rate just now on our retail deposits on the savings front. We reduced it to straight 3% for up to 5 lakh rupees. We just did this about maybe eight or 10 days ago, and the benefit of which I guess we'll begin to see a little more in the coming quarters. And the deposit is still coming for maybe multiple reasons, which we'll talk about that. We think one of the key reasons is customer service levels and the way we built the brand and the positioning and digital capabilities. But the thing is that it is coming so strong. The third thing is CASA. As you know, CASA is a hard-fought item in this market. Our CASA YOY has grown by 36%. We are now reaching some 97,000 crores. Fourth is a CASA ratio continues at around 46.6%. Just for context, I think last quarter it had been a little higher, maybe around 47. So that's about that. The fifth thing is in terms of retailization. Now, 80% of our deposits are retail. It gives us a lot of peace of mind because retail customers get used to transaction ID, password, relationship managers, branch services, auto debit, standing instructions, mutual fund investing. So they get used a number of services, so it becomes very sticky. And I think this is one of the hardest things to build in business rather than building the wholesale deposits. So that's 80%. Now, fifth thing is that certainly in the last 5 years, we've had success, as you'll agree. And we have repaid legacy borrowings and certificate of deposits of 65,000 crores since merger. So all such monies were maturing, and I'm happy to say that our bank has been able to raise retail deposits of this order of magnitude that we could pay off and we could, you know, settle all those, you know, dues on the respective due dates, which is obviously expected of us. But the fact that we raised it is still a moment of happiness for our organization and our team members. And that is something, again, calls back to our ability to raise deposits. Now, the next thing is the credit deposit ratio. In the credit deposit ratio front, you know, our incremental credit deposit ratio from June 23 to June 24 is just 72.1%. And, you know, this is one of the things that, as you know, is being talked about. Our credit deposit ratio has come now below 100%. Maybe by end of the year we'll go to some 92-93%, and next year we'll go to the 80s. So this is coming really very strong for us. Now, on the lending side, I'm happy to say that our portfolio continues to be highly diversified. We have close to about 25 business lines, and we have a issue in the joint liability book. We called it out in the last quarter also, but now later in the conversation, I'll bring out more specific numbers for you. But the barring that, let me say that all the rest of the business are behaving well and online, roughly in line with what we discussed last time or last quarter. Now, one key thing that may have kind of in all the melee may have missed your attention, but I like to point it out to you because it's a very key capability our bank has built and all our shareholders will be happy to note, is that we had close to about 3,500 crores of RIDF investments. I am really happy to say that since we are meeting up PSL requirements now, it's come down to close to about 840 crores. And more importantly, we were buying PSL certificates to meet our private sector needs, for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm happy to say that last year we broke, we turned the corner. We are now developing our own private sector, in the sense we are generating our own organic PSL, which is a key capability built. And in fact, last year we actually posted a small profit because we sold PSL certificates. Now, I'd like to, quickly come to the collection percentage and how the asset quality is behaving. Now, on the asset quality front, there are two things. One is the core business. In fact, in our investor presentation, we have actually given a step-by-step process about how we are underwriting loans. The first step after giving a loan is basically what we see as what we call the first EMI returns. The first EMI returns is basically an indicator of how good a loan you booked last month. Basically, if you book a loan, say 100 loans last month, this month is the first checks going to clearing or standing instruction or ENASH, and we see how many of them are returning. So on this front, earlier we were getting about 7% were returning, and now only 5% are returning. So that is, down 30%. So that is a clear indicator that incremental booking of the bank over the last many years is obviously better than the past. The collection percentage continues at around 99.5%. I'm meaning excluding joint liability group business. We'll talk about JLG in a moment. So it continues at 99.5%. In April of 24, we saw collection dip to 99.3%. That's, it came down, but it's back to 99.5% in May and June. There is a impact of the 99.3 because to that extent, slightly it affects the SMA. But these are, these are just events that even out over time. Now, on the joint liability group, while we are saying that we are collecting 99.5%, and frankly, just for definition, I want to share with you that these numbers are excluding prepayment collections, and they're that's excluding prepayment, excluding arrears, etc. It's still coming at 99.5. That's not the issue. In joint liability group, we saw this number come down from 99.7, which is the number we were used to in the past. It's come down to 99.2. So this time, we would imagine that many of you would be concerned that, why did we have to do so much provisions this quarter? Even sequentially it's gone up, but certainly YOY it's gone up. So what we have done is that we have in page 29 and 30, we have specifically called out two very, very important slides. We have, for the first time, publicly put out a proper vintage chart of the loan bookings that we are doing right now. After that, so how this works is that basically we draw up a chart of the loan bookings, the vintage analysis of loans booked, let me say pre-COVID, and then we see that what is the 30 DPD, 30 days past due, after say 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, etc. Then we take the bookings done last month or last year, and then we see at the same vintage, for the same 6 months, we see how much is the delinquency, how much became 30 DPD. So we have put it out, and you can see from the chart that in sixth MOB, 6 months on books, both series of transactions being after 6 months. So you book a loan in January 2020, and then see it after 6 months. So you see it in June 2020. Now you book a loan in, say, January of 2023, and see it after 6 months, that is in June 2023. So it's just like-to-like vintage. So that number has come down. It used to be 2.39%. Now it is coming at 0.83%. If you take, 12 months on book, it was 3.87%. Now it is 1.95%. So this is a very important slide. If you have time, I request you to, of course, peruse it. It gives you a comfort about the longer-term picture, because some of you might be concerned what will be like 1 year from now, how do we model 2027, and how do we get a comfort that the credit quality will hold well. Now, this chart will tell you that if this is what the delinquency is at the end of, this graph, so this will give a longer-term picture about how credit will behave, and we believe it will continue to behave well because these numbers are holding up so well. Now I want to come to the joint liability group, which is the key subject that we want to talk about today. Now, if you recall, in the last quarter, we brought out to all of you that our credit cost for the year is expected about 1.65%. Now, and we had kept a rein check on the JLG, saying that, look, we'll have to watch out for the JLG business, JLG meaning the microfinance business, and we had told you that we will come back to you and we will look to it and all that. Now, during the quarter, we have assessed it properly. We believe there is an impact of the joint liability book. Basically, we have a portfolio of joint liabilities largely in Tamil Nadu, and Tamil Nadu had, massive floods, so that portfolio did get impacted. And that book, the delinquency on the book has gone up in the joint liability book. Normally, pre the floods, our credit loss in the JLG book used to be about 1.6%, which frankly was quite low as compared to even industry. Industry used to run at 2.5, we are running 1.6. Now, our estimate of credit cost for this year on the joint liability group, because we are 60% concentrated in Chennai or Tamil Nadu, it is expected at around 5% or a little short of it. So that impact of about maybe 3.2% has come on the microfinance book. But fortunately, it is only 6% of the book. And the impact of that amount is giving us about 20 basis points more. So we'd imagine that about 1.85, including the impact of the JLG book, is what we are expecting, but it will be more front-loaded for Q1 and Q2 because of the reason I talked about. So this is the only thing I'd like to point out. The floods really are a one-off episode. It comes, it goes, and the impact, fortunately, the JLG book is only 1 or 2 years in life. So, in a quarter, 2 quarters, this will go away through the books. But we want to just point out to you so that you don't feel that the whole book has a problem. It's the joint liability group, and we pointed out to you. Rest is, behaving as 1.65 as we guided earlier. Now, I want to further tell you that how we're going to deal with this, because, of course, one thing is to take it through the P&L over this quarter, next quarter. But the issue is more about how do we deal with it in the future. What we've done is that since January of this year, we've been insuring our joint liability loans. So we pay off our premium for about 1% to CGFMU, and then therefore, if any such situation were to come in the future, the book will stand insured. Now, coming to the, also we've kind of tapered this book. We are now, book is about 12,700 crores, which is kind of flat over March of 2024. Now, if you look at SMA and SMA-2, that's not materially moved except for the joint liability group, maybe a little bit of here and there. Now, let me just sum it up, therefore, by saying on the asset quality that we had a bit of a, issue on this microfinance book, which we called out, not calling out more specifically now, but last year, last quarter also we called out. And like any other episodic event, like COVID is an episode, COVID went, but portfolios have normalized, like that this too will normalize. Now, but it's not affected the fundamentals of the business, which we'll talk in a moment in terms of cost and cost income ratios. Now I'd like to move quickly to, the cost to income ratio at the bank. Now, on the income front, let me tell you that the income is holding up quite strong. Fee income is really very diversified, coming out quite well. Now, the issue that many of you would like to know on the cost-to-income ratio is to say that how does this 72.9% credit cost-income ratio, which we had last year, how does this trend for the future? Now, first to tell you that the bank has done massive digitization in all our businesses, and that is really helping us reduce cost-income ratio. To give you an idea, on the deposit front, we are now, and I'll tell you how it helps. For example, we are now getting 212 crores per branch is our balances. On an incremental basis, we are getting close to about 55 to 60 crores per branch per year. This is obviously not fully generated by the branch. Our digital capabilities are helping us, and therefore helping us in our overall equation. So same logic holds for loans and all that. But let me come back to the cost income more specifically. So our cost to income ratio, the key picture we want to give is, because we had given a picture for 2029, and then we said that we expect the ROA to start becoming quite respectable, probably meeting industry, the best of the industry, or probably beating the industry norms. But we did get a sense that, okay, folks, but still, an interim picture of 2027 could help, rather than why wait till 2029 looks like far away. So what we've done is we have tried to estimate how our cost to income ratio will play out for 2027. And that is what we'd like to present to you. Now, I'd like to take you some numbers so that you can understand them better. Let me take the assets business, which is both the wholesale assets and retail assets, all put together. Now, there, our cost income ratio in FY 2022 was 60%. Now, last year, that is FY24, it is 53.2%. We believe this will comfortably come below 50 over between now with 2024, 25, 26, 27, we're talking of 3 years. Frankly, a percent a year is comfortably doable in this space just because of scale. So I don't expand too much on it. Maybe if you have Q&A on that, I will take it there. Our next, so basically on the core franchise of lending, we are doing pretty well at a 50% cost income ratio. Life will be good. Now let's talk about retail liabilities. On the retail liabilities, we've discussed before branches, ATMs, all that. I don't want to expand on that. But I can say that because we're a new bank, our cost income ratio is high. It's running 193%. Now, it is 193%. It has come down from 226% in 2022. Now, we have, over the next 3 years, something very important is going to play out in our respective lives. What's going to happen in our lives? I mean, the difference is that in the next 3 years, the requirement of deposits in the bank is going to come down. As we speak, in the last 5 years, we've been, handling a double burden. In the sense, one, we fund our loan book growth also. Plus, we are also paying 50,000 crores or 60,000 crores of, past liabilities, which is bonds and all that. Now, in the next 3 years, since that bonds will be almost paid off, we need money only for growth of the deposit or growth of the bank. So we need only one, not two. And that is a big one. And therefore, our need for branches are going to come down. So our branches, our branch requirements is going to, we are going to grow branches by only about 10%, sorry. We're going to grow branches by 10% annually. But we are expecting deposits to grow by at least 25% annually. You're currently growing 39, so 25 should not be difficult for us. So if the branches grow 10% and deposits grow 25%, automatically the cost income ratio of branches will come down. It just has to come down mathematically. So this number in FY27, we expect this to be 140%. Now I want to move to the credit cards. In the credit card business, the first year of operation, we were running 240%. In FY23, we came down to 164%. FY24, we came down to 116%. And, this trend will continue with scale. This we don't, it will just happen. So by FY27, we expect this to be 75%. Retail liabilities have told you know, dipping from 193 to 140. Retail credit cards have told you dipping from, you know, 116 to 75. And assets have told you dipping from about 53 to 50. So these three combined put together, we've done the maths, the combined, which is currently running 72.9, will come down to 65. That would be about a 700 basis points reduction on cost income. And all of you know how that maths works out if you cut the cost by that order of magnitude. So these were the key things I wanted to share with you, that so that you get a picture about how the story is headed in a more clear way, rather than our earlier conversation when we just used to tell you that it will go up, cost income will come down by scale. Many of you would scratch your head and say, fine, logically sounds okay, but what, how much? So today we put some numbers for you because we modeled it internally. So that's what we are heading towards. So finally, of course, I believe we've built a really phenomenal technology stack in the bank, and people who are experiencing the, I hope many of you using the bank app would hopefully will testify, you know, that or will agree that it's really one of the fantastic apps. Just to tell you that we are a Google Play Store rating of 4.9. Very, very, very few banks have achieved something like that. You know, app has to be really good to get 4.9 there. On App Store, we are 4.8. As per Forrester, we are among the only few, only Indian bank to feature among the global top 50 banking apps. So these are some really good things we're doing. But you know, at the end of the day, these matter because the customer experience matters, and that's where we get deposits and loans and all that. But you know, to step back for a moment, this is our strength. But you will be able to convert. Finally, you'll want to see it in ROE. And I'm pretty, if we meet a cost income ratio the way we're guiding it, which we think we will, then things will fall in place. And this joint liability group will be an episodic thing, and the episode will pass. So that's my quick comment to just open the discussion. You know what, after mine, Sudhanshu had some key points to make. We'll request him to keep in quick so that you have time for Q&A. But so then if you can take them to a key point.
Yeah, thanks. In fact, you have touched quite a bit of numbers. So okay. I'll try to restrict myself to only some incremental stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah. So one of the numbers which I want to call out was that the CASA ratio was quite healthy. In fact, the average CASA deposits have also increased by 34% on a YOY basis. The average CASA ratio for the quarter was around 45%. So we continue to see a good traction on this front. Even on term deposits, we all know rates have a factor to play in there. Retail term deposits have grown at 54% on a YOY basis. Our branch count now stands at 955 branches. We have added about 11 branches during the current quarter, and maybe we'll add few more in the year to pass by. Another good point to note is that our high-cost legacy borrowings have now come down to about rupees 10,000 crores. About 50% of this will further run off in the balance year, and so at the end of the year we'll be left with just sub 5,000 crores on this front, which will definitely help us to look for lower deposits and other benefits that will kick in, which Vaidya already touched upon. The credit to deposit ratio is quite good for the quarter. In fact, the incremental was only 68% for the quarter if we exclude one short-term deposit outflow, which we had called out from a government account during Q4. So that is coming quite healthy. On stock, the credit to deposit ratio is now down to 98.1%. In this aspect, the cost of funds, if I have to touch upon, that increased marginally by 4 basis points to 6.47%, and the deposit cost was higher by about 11 basis points to 6.38%. The increase in deposit cost was primarily due to the repricing impact on FD. Moving quickly on to assets, you would have noted that the growth on a YOY basis was 22.0%, and on a sequential basis it was 4.2%. We have given a detailed breakup product-wise in slide 84 of the investor presentation. On the non-infra corporate book, that also increased by 14% on a YOY basis. And the infrastructure book is now down to 1.3% of the total funded assets. By the end of the year, we expect this to come more around 1%. Talking of credit card very quickly, we have now issued more than 2.7 million cards. The book size is about rupees 6,000 crores. And the gross spend on credit card has increased by about 49% on a YOY basis. Very quickly, moving on to asset quality, the gross NPA stood at 1.9% at June and net NPA is down to about 0.59%. It's broadly stable if we compare to the previous quarter. In fact, if we exclude the infrastructure book, the GNPA would be more around 1.6% and net NPA would be more around 0.43% at bank level. We have increased the PCR by about 60 basis points during the current quarter, and it now stands at 69.38%. Again, here, if we exclude the infrastructure book, the PCR would stand increased to 73.5%. The GNPA in the retail, rural, and MSME segment put together saw a slight increase during the current quarter, and it was at 1.46%, but the net NPA here is only at 0.46%. Moving on, the standard restructured book that continues to come down, that has come down from 0.31% in last quarter to now 0.26% of funded assets. It has to be noted that around 95% of the restructured book is secured in nature and we hold around 20% provision on the same. Where they have already talked about SMA numbers, so I'll skip that, but the increase during the quarter was largely led by JLG. Gross slippage for the quarter were ₹1,657 crores. And net slippages were ₹1,132 crores. We saw some moderation in recoveries and upgrades during the quarter, and that number stands at ₹526 crores in Q1, vis-a-vis 623 crores in Q4 FY24. Moving quickly to profitability, NI saw strong growth. It grew by 25% on a YOY basis. The net interest margin for the quarter was at 6.22%. On a sequential basis, NIM was lower by 11 basis points. But as we have mentioned in the presentation that a primary part of this reduction was because we were carrying slightly higher investment book in the form of T-bills, which had an impact of about 8 basis points. The rest of the impact was due to slight increase in cost of funds, as I had mentioned earlier. Fee and other income for the quarter increased by 9% on a YOY basis and 19% on a YOY basis. And the growth was largely led by retail, which grew by 21% on a YOY basis. The trading gain for the quarter was around 24 crores. Operating expenses increased by 21% on a YOY basis and was in fact flat on a sequential basis. As a result, the cost to income has come down to 70.45% for Q1 from 73.15% in the previous quarter. Core operating profit as a result also increased by 30% on a YOY basis to ₹1,858 crores for the quarter. As you would have noted, provisions came in slightly higher at 994 crores for the quarter and were higher by 38% on a sequential basis. This was largely led because of normalization and some uptick which we saw in the JLG portfolio. Credit cost for the quarter was at 190 basis points, but if we exclude JLG, then it is more around 170 basis points. PAT for the quarter is at ₹681 crores. This was lower by 11% on a YOY basis, but if we exclude trading gains from both the periods, then the decline was more around 7%. Provisions in this quarter were higher in JLG relative to Q1 of last year by about 132 crores. This also led to a lower tax if we apply the tax rate by about 100 odd crores. Moving on to the last piece, which is on capital adequacy, the bank now has a capital adequacy of 15.88% at June 24, with a CET1 ratio at 13.34%, this is including the profits of the quarter. We had a benefit of about 14 basis points due to the transition to the new investment circular with effect from April 1, 24. And however, if we take into account the capital which came in July 24, then the CET1 ratio at June stands increased to 14.67% and the total capital adequacy will stand increased to 17.21%. Last point from my front before we open up, LCR we have maintained about 118%. This has increased from 114% in the previous year and we have been maintaining healthy liquidity levels.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Pritesh Bum from DAM Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Sir, two questions. One is that the industry has seen a bit of NPAs in the unsecured piece, and we are one of the significant players. What is the reading from the early indicators if this can move up further, any geographic concentration? And is this driven more by the early age group of, borrowers?
See, our unsecured retail is 15% of the book, and which is the key focus area for the bank, and key focus area anyway in terms of people observing that book, so to say, for performance. Not the focus of the bank, but the area that is focused upon for credit quality. Now, on this front, roughly we are seeing that it is varying broadly normally. That is why we are able to stick to our credit guidance of 1.65% overall at the bank level. No material movement at this point of time. But, like everybody knows, we've got to be very careful here, and we'll keep an eye out.
But sir, any age group which is driving for the industry, because a lot of millennials and everybody is raising money from or borrowing money from even the fintech lenders. So anything there we can call
yeah.
out?
Yeah, we can call out if you want to go deeper. So in the sense that when we analyze our credit card business, for example, I don't mean the overall unsecured. Like I'm not talking uniformly for the entire 15%, but I'll take one sliver of credit cards and talk to you. So on that, we find that people in the age group of, the 40 to 50 to 60 are the best performers of credit. The 40 to 50 are maybe the 30 to 50 are the 30 to 40, 50 are the next best. And the maybe people who are the youngest borrowers, the 20 to 30, their delinquency is relatively higher. So we do see a definitive in age pattern, but I think it's not news in that sense. People always know that youth are a little less responsible. So that's one. And the other thing is that on the comment on fintech that you talked about, we also experienced that in the buy now, pay later business. We did find that our delinquency, especially the 1 month kind of loans that we were doing, we were one of the early players in that game, then we were tying up with e-com companies and doing buy now pay later businesses, where somebody could come to a e-com, set up a preset line, and they could draw and they could pay 1 year, 1 month later. Now again, small ticket, age group are usually low, the delinquency is relatively high for us. So we dealt with all that, but nothing that's not like disturbing us, because they're taking it to the, it's like normal course, part of the same 1.65 we're talking about.
Got it. So second question was on the LCR impact from the recent guidelines. We are at 118% in Q1. So any impact assessment on that? And as you mentioned in the opening remarks that our deposit raising intensity moves down and also the resultant cost to income. So any thoughts on this one, if that will slightly, delay or do something on our end result?
No, so on the LCR, as I said, so while these draft guidelines have come in, and if you see that we have been maintaining a very high, solid base on the retail deposits, that is one of the highest in the industry. If you see as for the LCR disclosure, that is at 58%. And because now the runoff factor is suggested to be increased, we would have some impact on that front. But we feel quite confident because the deposits are coming on very strongly. In addition to that we feel that we have not drawn much in form of borrowings, right? So we have lines available in the form of refinance. We have a very small portion currently utilized in form of certificate of deposits. Then FX borrowings is also an option. So we feel that if we have to meet that ratio on April 1, we will be able to mobilize through some of these sources. Incrementally, if you ask me, there would be some additional ask which could come in, but we feel that our deposit machinery is quite strong enough to mobilize some additional deposits.
Great, sir. Thank you. Those were my questions. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ishan Agrawal from Arvina Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Firstly, would want to appreciate the customer service and the mobile app of the bank. Superb as compared to other banks that I have experienced. And I'll move on to my questions. So my first question is, you had guided for a cost to income to be stable at 72% for Q1 and Q2 and then start dropping off and break the 70s by Q4. This quarter, the cost to income is at 70.5%. So how does the trajectory look like for the coming quarters of this year?
First of all, you know, we're very thankful that you said what you said about our app. You know, we go crazy building it. It's just loving it. All of us are doing user testing on it every day. So it's real, built on really super platform. So, you know, so we're very happy that you liked it. So thanks. Now, the on the cost income ratio for this, see, we'd like to actually really guide for 27, you know, one quarter, maybe a little up and down. So sometimes it can give misleading, you know, can give signals one way or the other. But directionally, of course, this year we expect to grow OPEX only by 20%. Last year our OPEX grew by 30%. 33%. So we are definitely slowing down OPEX growth in this bank. And that is, as you know, once you slow the OPEX growth, straight away it feeds into cost income. So we expect that this year will grow OPEX only by 20. Even first quarter, I think OPEX grown only 20.
21.
So this quarter also OPEX grown only by 21. So you should expect of us that when you track us Q on Q on Q for the next four quarters, we should not grow OPEX more than 20%, let me say. Income, of course, should grow by maybe 23% or so.
23 to 24%.
So automatically, you know, the jaw opens. So that's what you should expect from us. And therefore, it should reduction. But more importantly, the picture that we've given for 27, where we have done our work, done our modeling, you know, that should give you, that should give you better glide path.
Okay. So moving on to my next question,
Ishan, just before you continue, just one quick feedback from you, you know, it will help us. This picture that we gave about how the credit card cost income ratio and retail liabilities and assets will come, how they will come together into the overall bank, you can be honest with us, did that help clarify or you still feel the doubts there? If you have doubts, please ask us. Because
actually, for me, as a as an analyst tracking your bank for a long time, for me, what really helps is the blended number. Because for me to see from outside the internal moving parts does not really help me, to be honest.
Okay, thank you for the feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, my question, my second question is, you had guided for our ROE touching the lower end of our guidance by Q4 of this year. Now, with the increased equity capital base and increased JLG provisioning, which we did not anticipate, say, two quarters or one quarter back, do you believe you can still achieve that? And if no, then what ROE number can we look at by Q4 of this year?
We got to see the number, but it looks like it's difficult. But because we raised capital, but I think the and also the extra provision that is coming because of the microfinance book, you know, so to an extent. But I think that the ROA, let's talk ROA, Ishan, if that helps you, and then you know, ROE is just a, you know, is just a multiple of the multiple on that number. So let's talk ROA. So our estimate is that we will get to 1.4% by. We'll probably be flat this year, and next year we'll flat over 24, and next year probably 1.2, and by 27, 1.4. That's how things are moving in our estimates.
And Ishan, just to add, we continue to sort of hold that profits in H1 could be slightly lower because of the JLG impact which were called out. But H2 profits should be much better than that. So you would see an ROE uptick as we move on during the course.
Yeah, that's right, Sudhanshu. Basically, see, for us, our profits is going to be more back-ended this year because the JLG impact is coming the first two quarters. And maybe a little bit of tail will come in the third quarter, but not so much. But next quarter, you must expect that the numbers on the PAT front, though we do expect the deposit growth to be very strong. We expect the loan growth to be, you know, well moderated, and that should be fine. NIM and cost and everything will be fine, but provision will be more elevated next quarter also. But then that's for the reason we already said many times in the session, so I don't want to repeat it. But then Q3 should be okay, and then Q4 will look good.
Okay, and one last one with respect to the reverse merger with IDFC Limited. So IDFC Limited recently declared an interim dividend of Rs. 1. So was this a part of the merger, or was this capital going to flow into the bank, or was this already discussed with the parent?
No, it is clearly discussed with IDFC Limited, because basically there was a project that entity had invested in their project financing hat, and that project was still sitting with IDFC Limited. So when we had done the work, there was a clear understanding between the two parties that that cash flow, outflow of cash from that entity will belong to them, and there was structurally contracted like that. So this is part of that contract. And there were some timing issues on the front, but we felt in good spirit that they should get what is theirs, and they paid the dividend. It's fully in with our understanding, with our support, and as per the agreement we had between two parties, it does not affect the cash, and it doesn't affect the economics of a transaction.
Okay, thank you, and all the best for the future quarters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ishan.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shubhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for this opportunity. I've got two questions, actually, both up on two different asset classes. One is the digital personal loan, the second one is personal loan, and the other one is on digital consumer durable loans and consumer durable loans. Just wanted to understand what is the difference in terms of ticket size, the cost of acquisition, the customer segment that we are targeting in both these segments, and what is the sourcing difference here? And my last question would be, what kind of zero plus are we seeing in a salaried PL and digital PL now versus, say, two quarters ago?
Let's take them one by one. If you meant to say what is the credit consumer durable different than digital consumer credit, is that what you asked?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So the consumer durable business is how, let me say, you go to a Vijay Sales and, you know, regular consumer durables, you go to any Reliance digital store and you buy goods. So these are offline purchases, like physical purchases, where usually one of our representatives is sitting there. They are engaging with the customers, and they are onboarding customers. Are they providing them instant credit on the spot to customers? So that business, maybe Sudhanshu can confirm to me, but like close to about 4,500 crores of loan book we have on the front.
No, almost about 6,000 crores.
6,000 crores. About 6,000 crores of loan book is there on the consumer durable business. So that business pretty much works like how the other large NBFC in India is operating, let me say that player and our player are the two So that is our consumer durable businesses. So our book is about 6,000 something crores, and we've been doing that business now for 14 years. We are, let me say, number two player in the country after the number one, and got really fantastic, you know, capabilities at the store point. Is a very, very difficult business to do because of the economies of scale. Ticket size is small, tenor is small, and just a difficult business to do. But we are happy we did that and we learned that business. It takes a long time. And scorecards and technologies and all that. Now, the second business that you're referring to, the digital consumer, is what we do on the online stores. If you go to any of the large e-com companies and go to check out there, then we could finance a product for you just on the fly, just as you would have done it on the physical store. That's what's called the digital consumer durable.
And the average ticket sizes and the customer segment, in one segment, my sense is that in offline, we would be doing a lot of NTB versus the other format where we would largely do a KTB. Is that a fair assessment?
So I imagine the ticket size will be more like about 50,000-60,000 rupees.
Yeah, that's correct.
On the consumer durables. Even the digital personal credit consumer we talked about, it comes in two types actually. One is the one that comes with a 1 month kind of product. 1 month, like you pay back in a month. Now, I told you earlier in the call that in answer to somebody else's question, probably Pritesh's question, that we do find, more delinquency in that. But we continue to do the longer term. So if you did buy a mobile phone on a Flipkart or somewhere, or let me say any other this one. So we do finance them for a longer period, like 6 months or 9 months. That we continue to do. That we like that business also. So these are two things. But frankly, these are what is really good about our bank is that we have developed really, really fantastic capabilities. You try doing this business at scale, it just has a lot of tech involved, a lot of scorecards involved, a fraud scorecard and credit scorecard and identity checks and collection capabilities. Everything is required for this business, whether digital, and we built those capabilities.
Understood. And the question on personal loans, there's a digital personal loan and then there's a salaried personal loan. So what is the difference in the ticket size customer segment?
There are two types. One is a regular, when you say salaried personal loan, these are regular personal loans, like how you're an employee of any of the large A-CAT, B-CAT companies, and, you apply for a loan and take maybe 2 lakh, 3 lakh rupee personal loan, or maybe 4, 5 lakh, and then you pay back over 2 or 3 years, or maybe 4 years. So that is one kind of personal loan. But those are typical uses, could be like really personal use, could be medical or whatever. Now, the thing is that the other kind of personal loan that we have started doing now is for customers who come to, so the former is regular, it's been going on in India for 20, 30 years. The second one, which I'm going to describe now to more specific question from you, is that if you are an existing savings account customer of our bank, and then we saw your, that we are consistently seeing that your salary credit is coming to our account at say maybe 2 lakhs or 1 lakh per month, and we're continuing to see credits in your account. And then we see that you're constantly meeting, say, 2 lakh or 3 lakh in your bank balance, in your bank. Let me make it up. So then what we do is that we assess that flow of cash, and then we set up a limit for you. So then you can come to our app, and you can draw that money literally in a few seconds. So we set up a limit for you. What we do is we set up a limit of, say 2 lakh rupees. You can come in tomorrow, draw 30,000 rupees out of that limit and start paying EMI only at 30,000, and we allow any time prepayment. And best part is we don't charge for prepayment fees at all. So we just close it any day you want, any time, no prepayment fee. So we do this facility, and these are also being pretty much loved by customers. That's the difference between the two, because this one can go in multiple tranches with no prepayment, the digital personal loan, versus the other salary loan are like regular ones with a prepayment fee because it's been offline originated and all that.
And what is the difference in the ATS?
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. May I request you to please rejoin the queue for your follow-up?
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nishant Shah from MLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations for the very good quarter. And well appreciated on the cost to income kind of like trajectory going on. So I just had like one question. You've answered one on the LCR already. Just on the merger consummation, when can we expect that merger consummation? And related question to that, does that have any net worth accrual benefits to it?
Yeah, about maybe 600 odd crores of net worth accrual.
Yeah, about 500 to 600 crores.
And looks like a Q2 item.
Q2. Okay. So basically anytime in this month or like next month or so.
This quarter. I think there was a NCLT hearing yesterday and they pushed
it up. So there is an NCLT hearing which has been slightly adjourned while we are still awaiting the official date, but we are hopeful of this getting concluded by end of Q2. More around end of September.
Okay, sir. Okay, got it. Thank you so much. And you've already addressed this a bit on the LCR front. What do you anticipate like the NIM impact could be from this? Like, is it just the simple dumb math of, okay, HQLA goes up by a certain percentage, and whatever is the cash drag there is the NIM impact, or is there some more nuance to it than what we understand?
See, since the norms itself have been so tightened by now and made more conservative, then you know we got to watch out for the rest of the industry also as to how much is the new benchmark of you know extra you want to hold over the 100. We haven't yet come to thought that through, because earlier it was a norm to keep 116, 118, 120. We don't know. Maybe we may keep 110. I don't know. We've not yet made up a name because we've got to see the emerging protocols. But let me just say that the extra you keep could be, suppose you have a certain number. So our own estimates are something like you might have to incur 1% of a drag on the incremental amount that comes our way. So we got to see what the number turns out to be.
Yeah, and some part of the cost we could also pass. So we'll see in terms of how the industry also reacts to it. So when they're saying 1%, it could be more around 75 to 1 in that zone. So we don't see a major impact out of this, but we feel that we need to see how this pans out.
But let's simulate it for a moment so that you get some clarity. Let us say that, you know, it's like 10,000 crores. And then you say that, look, you know, if it's 80 basis points, let's call it 80 crores. You know, I'm just giving you some picture, so don't take this as a, like a final word for me, but I'm giving you some color so that you can get a sense of what numbers are thinking in our mind.
Got it, sir. All right. Thank you so much for the time. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agrawal from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Hi, sir. I have three questions, and before that, like, firstly, thanks for the additional disclosures and the FY27 projections on cost-income ratio. This really helps to understand the glide path on the cost-income.
Thank you.
And so, first question is on the bulk. If I see like the bulk of the improvement in cost-income is likely to come in from the retail liabilities, because on assets we are broadly there at 53, and on cards it's just a very small part of the total business. So now that as if we work with large banks also, and they would have a sense about how the industry data moves on this. So if you can talk about how the cost-income ratio will be for bigger banks and how this generally evolves as such. Because IDFC Bank, if I look at this, is like in the fifth or sixth year of its operations post-merger. So how does it really evolve over the longer period? How do you see that?
No, thanks for that, first of all, Nitin. See, the thing is that just see that our retail deposits in December of 2018 was 10,000 crores. Okay. Now, so think of it like practically it is like zero base. In the context of 2 lakh crores, let me say 10,000 crores pretty much zero base. So let me say it's been 5 years. Now, it's not exactly zero base because the teams have been working on it 2-3 years before that also, but just for context. So therefore, it's been 5 years. So now, if you think of other organizations, I'd say that, you know, it would be like 14, 15 years for banks to completely break even on this space and start making money, because if you start from zero base, because it does have a drag, you know, similar experiences at other large DFIs that converted, etc. Liabilities took a long time to break even, you know, from what we know. But in our case, there is one very positive thing coming in our favor. Because of the new winds of change of digital technologies that have come, and something that we have really gotten a grip of, and we are, I hope if you check out informally in the market, they'll probably tell you that we are one of the best banks in terms of digital capabilities. So because of the digital capabilities used by us, and the brand we built, and the image the bank enjoys, etc., we are getting our deposits quicker than anybody would have anticipated. Therefore, that period when this negative drag will zero out may not be that long, like 5 more years in our estimate. So in 5 more years, it will have dragged out, and by the fifth year from today, it will be zero, and in our estimates. And by 6 years, it should start in making money. And that's our estimate. Maybe a 6 year kind of break even, you know, think of like a year here or there. So definitely we are, one thing is pretty certain, the way we're looking at it, we are running ahead on the cost to income, at least in the liability side, because it's not going to be that long drawn like for any other startup DFI converting, no.
Okay.
And the reason also, sorry to just add one extra point to that, the reason is also easy to see. I bet, Nathan, even you would not have imagined that this bank is going to raise 2 lakh crores in 5 years. Did you imagine? I don't think so. Nobody imagined. So yeah. That amount of, you know, so imagine in the next 5 years, we think it'll be 6 lakh crores. So the book is going to grow by 4 lakh crores, but we're going to add only maybe 500 crores, 500 branches more, right? So maybe 500, 600 in that order of magnitude. So think of the efficiency of the incremental model coming up.
All right. Got it. And so second question is like, have we taken some portfolio actions and tightened underwriting in our retail business other than JLG? Because we are guiding for unchanged credit cost and all the impact on the guidance is because arising because of the JLG. While most banks and other large NBFCs also are reporting an increase in credit cost already. So what is really driving that stability in the rest of the retail business?
So Nitin, we have been watching the portfolio on a continuous basis. In fact, we have also taken a lot of policy interventions. Of course, we all know that if you take some intervention in a particular quarter, it takes a bit of time for it to play out. So we have been watching this. We have been also picking cues that things have been normalizing. So we are constantly monitoring the portfolio. We gave an example of a vintage analysis for one particular product. This is something which we do and assess on a continuous basis for all the products, right? Including check bounce, including collection efficiency, how things are moving, as I said, on a vintage basis. So a lot of interventions we have taken in few other products, and we feel hence we are guiding that credit cost could start normalizing more so in H2.
Okay,
so this intervention could be more around leverage related, could be that we reduce our disbursements in the bottom of the pie. So there could be many factors which we sort of look into and take into account.
So I'll give you some examples if you're looking at. Now, you know, in some businesses we chose that customers below a certain CIBIL leverage, because what we take from CIBIL is not exactly the score only, you know, that's just one data point. We actually would take the underlying criteria. So we tightened in one product, say in our cross-sell products. You know, what we do is that we cross-sell, I'll give you color about one product. For example, we cross-sell personal loans to consumer durable customers who have been on our books for a period of time and who have performed well. And that's part of the profitability of the consumer durable business. Now, in that business, some months ago, we tightened the CIBIL leverage, how much leverage, the customer could have. Then we cut the lower end of the decile. For example, if the cutoff was, say, X, we tightened it to cut 10% of the lowest end of the customer base. We do stuff like that. Basically, we've identified those kind of business and taken some actions. For example, in another business, we cut out certain PIN codes. In some other business, we took out, we figured out some phone locking model where customers are, you know, there was some fintech that was giving us the capability of locking a phone if a customer doesn't perform and with the customer's permission. So that we introduced, and that we think is a nice control. In another business, in some cities, some smaller cities, we cut out below a certain cutoff, or certain dealerships, we cut out the volumes. So that kind of work we do keep doing all the time.
And Mithun also said that BNPL also as a product, we were seeing slightly higher delinquency there. So that also as a product, we have shut down. So we are not disbursing there on that product.
Right. Got that. And so lastly, just one housekeeping data also, like if you can share the NPA recovery and upgrade and write-off data also.
May I request you to please rejoin the queue for your follow-up question?
Okay, sure. I'll join back.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Manish Shukla from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening and thank you for the opportunity. If I were to look at the vintage analysis slide, is graph A and graph B, of your outstanding book, what proportion would be graph A and what proportion would be graph B?
See, let me say this graph B.
SME is about 150,000 crores.
No, it's a very good question. That's a very, very good question. So, the graph A would have become much lesser by now because graph A pertained to pre-COVID booking and that was basically a 18-19 slide. So 18-19, frankly, you know, the book would have been, the book itself at that point of time used to be, I'd say about maybe 35,000 crores. So, or 40,000 crores, it would have gone off by now. So it's largely the new book.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. Moving to the SMS slide.
It would largely be the graph 2.
Understood. Yeah. Understood, yeah.
Yeah. Because graph 2, just to be technically correct with you and so that we're all talking of the same sheet, graph 2 represents to booking done between April 1, 2022 to 31st March, 2024.
Okay, very clear. Yeah, thanks. Moving to the SMA slide number 32. Overall SMA has gone up by 16 bps, and considering that JLG is only 6%, it has contributed only 3 bps to this increase. Balance 13 bps has come from rest of the portfolio.
Not 13.
Clearly, there is stress beyond GLG as well, right?
No. First of all, it's not only 3 bps. I think it's a little more than that. But let me just say that, of course, it is.
No, that's, so that's straight math, right? 85 is going to 1.01 and 6% of the book.
We'll come to that, of course. So we want to tell you that basically the core book is about 0.91%, right? Or 0.95. 0.95. So just to get your math right, so you can do the math offline, but we are telling you the numbers. So 0.95 is the SMA excluding the JLG impact, and that is at 10 basis points over March 24. So and this is because if you went back to the slide in collection efficiency, you saw the April number at 99.3%.
Yes.
Remember I called it out when I was speaking to you. Well, you're normally running 19.5. So that is some amount of money because, you know, that that period of April, May, elections were on, holidays were on, you know, so it is a small thing. But frankly, some slight movement comes there and seasonal things, they go away. Collections have recovered after that. It's back to 19.5. So yeah, it's nothing that we should really like, you know, it's not like, for example, if you see May 24, it's already back to 99.6. June is back to 99.5. So these things happen, you know, in industry. If you see last year, for example, you go back to the same slide, page number 27, we have clearly shown that April 23 also we reported 99.3. Though, of course, there was no election that time. I don't know what happened. I mean, I got to go back in time and see what happened then. But, you know, by some good coincidence, even April 23 is also 99.3. But, you know, the good thing is that now a bank is continuously achieving this 99.5 for a long time.
Okay. Yeah, looks like a April phenomena every year.
You don't know. I mean, I in fact, I requested my team members to actually go back and check what, you know, April 22 also was. Oh, yeah, it's there already. April 22 also has 19.3.
Yeah.
So 22, 23, 24. So three times in a row, April has shown a 20 basis point dip.
All right, sir. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raghu from Travis Capital Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I just want to come back to the cost to income ratio again. Sorry for raising it so many times. The FY27 guidance what you have given, is it for the start of FY27 or the end of FY27?
For FY27. Yes.
Okay, so the reason why I was asking, I was a bit disappointed by the 65%. I'll tell you why I was. Because the capital first, the exit cost to income ratio was something around 56-57%. 48. Okay. So yeah, at least at the March end of the year, I saw for the March FY17. So even after 8-9 years of operation of the bank and we doing so well with deposits, we still about 10-15% higher than when we were with as an NBFC. does it sound, it somehow doesn't fit. So can you please explain why is it that way?
No, it's a very fair question. The thing is that you're right, by FY27, this would be 10 years of the bank. Now, but, you know, just to be honest, you see that this was running 95. 95. Yeah.
Correct.
Now, so we started with a very, you know, with a big sandbag on the back. And then on top of it, you know, then after that, one second, let me open my slide so I can have a good conversation with you. So the, my slide is in front of me. Now back to you. So therefore, when we look at that number, you know, it started with that sort of a situation of having a high cost income ratio. So it rapidly came down. You know, by the way, to move from 95 to 72 in 5 years is really not a joke. I can tell you that it's been very, very, very hard at our end to achieve this. I mean, you are not happy with the numbers even at 72. I understand that you're an investor and you would have other areas to invest and therefore you have choices. But from our point of view, even 72 has been very hard because we were investing in branches, ATMs, people, technologies, tax change, everything changed. Now, therefore, and people, we have the branches, etc. So the thing that, so it did come down. Now, therefore, when we look ahead, well, at 65, should you be unhappy or happy? Depends on how you, what your expectations are. Because even this movement of 700 basis points from 72 to 65, it is coming because there is very concrete action being taken on each of the three subcomponent businesses. Really, for a bank fundamentally is heavily more loaded. You know, there is 30% of the book goes away earning nothing. And NBFC, every penny earns. And it's a very big difference, by the way. You know, CRR, SLR, DISTRAC, compliance costs, now even LCR. So it's just 30% of your money just doesn't earn anything at all. So I just imagine that probably one of the reasons. But still at 65, frankly, you know, the base at which it is, last year it did not drop. I concede that. But generally speaking, the pace at which it is moving down from 95 to 65, let me say, 30% drop in, if we achieve this by 2027, I'd say that, from our point of view, it would be quite a moment.
Thank you. The next question is...
So wait a minute, madam. Just one thing. Let me just confirm with him because I'm not sure he's aligned with me or not. So what would you think? Would you think Raghu's a fair comment or the reason I gave you 30% of the money in a bank doesn't earn anything at all? Maybe that's the reason or... I mean, would you agree with that or you disagree with that?
So the line for the current participant got disconnected.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah, let's move it.
Let's move on to the next participant. The next question is from the line of MB Mahesh from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. I just had this question on slide 27. Historically, you kind of indicated that it's a good reference point to understand what credit cost looks like. But if you go back and see this quarter, it doesn't seem to be showing that representation because the increase in credit cost seems to be much higher. And you also asked us to look at 23 and 22 data as a point of, as an example of the same. But if you go back into those quarters also, you don't see such kind of a credit cost increase. Just wanted to understand, does this chart actually give you a reference point of credit cost in the first place?
Well, this is a current bucket, and by the time it moves to credit cost, it's 6 months after this chart. But it gives it's a good indicator because end of the day, if you're collecting 99.5% of the current bucket, it is a really good indicator. Now, number two, the credit cost itself, as you know, Mahesh, and you're tracking financials, and you know you're really good at it. The thing that there is a normalization happening this year. What is normalization? So this will benefit everybody. Normalization meaning that, look, when the COVID is going on, there was a certain amount of charge-offs and provisions people took. Now, some part of the money kept collected, you know, through 22, 23, 24. So that kind of reduced the amount of impact people are taking on the credit cost until last year. Now this year, that kind of the portfolio, you know, whatever we had to recover is kind of recovered. So that normalization is happening. And of course, on top of it, the JLG happened. So, but normalization, frankly, I'm not very disturbed about, because Mahesh, I hope you'll also agree, 165 without JLG. Would you agree with me, Mahesh, that even if the, if you think of the other large institution, which is also in very similar lines of business like ours, and it's almost very similar, and they're also talking of 185. So,
yeah, that's true.
Isn't that a fair comment, Mahesh?
That is fair.
So if they are running 185 and we are talking 185 with the impact of GLG and without GLG we are talking 165, would you not agree that it's really best in class performance, Mahesh?
No, it is. I'm just trying to reconcile the way you're presenting the information to see whether this slide has any predictive power. That's it.
Yeah, eventually it does, because end of the day this translates to, you know, this is current bucket, but eventually it translates over to the bucket subsequently.
Yeah. So just one question, this 720 crores going to, let's say 995 crores, the provisions and contingencies, you've kind of alluded to the fact that this quarter, recovery from return of assets, previously return of assets was on the low side. But from a delta perspective, nearly about 250 crores has essentially gone towards the MFI book.
180, no? What is the number? How much has gone to provisions and MFI book this quarter?
Yes, I'm just trying to understand the delta.
Yeah, better in the delta.
Yeah, so provisions, you're saying for over the sequential quarter?
No. He's saying
for
the provision.
No, sequential quarter is better for me, because that helps us to understand the numbers a little bit easier.
No problem.
No, on sequential quarter also, we saw increase in JLG as well, while we have called out 130 crores is the impact over Q1 and this Q1. But in this quarter also, we saw some bit of increase coming from JLG. As Vaidya alluded, the flood came in December, right? And there were additional impacts which came in because of heat wave and some of, I would say, seasonality, elections and so on. So we saw some effect on the collection efficiency overall, particularly in April and some bit of in May. So increase has come in JLG plus in some other portion of the book. We had, in fact, in Q4, when we had called out that H1 credit cost could be slightly higher, right, and it could come down into H2, we had also called out one factor like an FLDG, where we have done some disbursement, right, which was not through the FLDG route. There we are getting some NCL we'll get some NCL in H1, and that would sort of not be there in H2.
But it's not that, just to be clear, that is not an NCL that is, you know, out of the ordinary. It's like it's a normal course of business, except that it won't come in H2 because, you know, let me just say it is secured by the counterparty. It's a default guarantee. But this, so SLDG, we shouldn't bother too much about it, because, I mean, we take it as part of a normal business, because we're booking it, we're getting the income, and we have the credit cost. So that's normal. But let us come back to more about the credit cost as such. So therefore, even without, the people have talked about heat wave, people have talked about lots of things. We said everything subsumed in the numbers. And everything subsumed also, at least as far as our eyes can see right now, we are human beings, we can make, you know, as the Q2, Q3, Q4 rolls out, God knows, maybe 5-6 basis points more or less, I don't know. I mean, it could be somewhere there. But but as far as our eyes can see and the way we can model the book right now, it looks like, you know, 165, which, and including JLG, 185. Let's take, you know, upward bias, let's call it 190 for a minute. Chalai, guys, still much lesser than, let me say, or not lesser than, but this is the best-in-class performance of the industry in these customer segments.
Understood, sir. Thanks a lot for this.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Mundra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
On this aspect only, in GLG, the rise in delinquency has been because of the Tamil Nadu floods. But do you see any impact due to heat wave or maybe any disturbance due to general election, or it should subside as you had expected last quarter by second quarter?
Well, these numbers subsumes everything. So we don't have anything more to call out because of the seasons. But you're right. When we talked to our people did give feedback. They said, you know, elections, so many people are on leave. It was faced, very faced, a long-term process. There were some states in which some politicians had called and said, you know, the waiver is happening and all that. So, you know, these kind of things keep on happening. These kind of cycles happen, come and go. But, I mean, these kind of small incidents happen here and there. But our numbers are all, broadly, it's all subsumed.
Right. And so in JLG, is it the, I mean, do you also run individual MFI book also, or all the MFI is JLG?
All the MFI is JLG only.
Right. Lastly, sir, cost of deposit, I think, how should one look at cost of deposit when your ask rate for deposit is going to come down? Maybe for next 2-3 quarters, how do you see the cost of deposit panning out?
Let's think cost of funds, actually. That would probably be a good benchmark, because end of the day, that's what will translate to the profitability. So our cost of funds right now running at 6.47. And we, out of this, close to about, as you know, 10,000 crores is still high cost money sitting with us. So when the high cost money goes off, we modeled it, and then we assume for a minute that 10,000 crores of high cost money, let us say it is replaced with the cost of normal cost of deposits of the bank. We found that this number of 647 will come down to 636. We'll get 11 basis points improvement. So think of it, in other words, think of our bank at cost of funds of 6.36 today, as in when you pay off the bonds, which is like a year from now. And frankly, 636 is lower than at least the peer banks, meaning the mid-sized banks. So we are probably the lowest among the mid-sized banks today at 636. So we are very proud, you know, just to step away, just permit me to digress for a moment, that, you know, our deposits are, you know, coming so strong because of the brand and many other things, but they are coming at this pace of a 39% growth or 30% growth, despite having cost of funds lowest in the mid-sized banks group. So that's very important, and I hope you'll agree, it's a very significant thing, actually.
Right. Thank you, and all the very best, sir.
Thank you very much, yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hardik Shah from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, sir. I have two questions. One is, before a couple of weeks, I think you tweaked your savings rate rule by offering 7.25% for more than 5 lakhs instead of more than 10 lakhs. Anything that you can share on how much can that have the impact on the cost of funds according to your model?
No, we did two things at the same time. So we were, as you know, we were paying 7%.
Correct.
We were paying 7%, and we were paying, if I'm not mistaken, up to 1 lakh, we were paying 3%. Actually, up to 1 lakh earlier, we were paying 7% through. But now we have now dropped 0 to 5 lakhs to 3%.
Correct.
So it's going to
be net positive because of this?
Yeah, net positive, yeah. So we're going to work. So, you know, one interesting thing that we are observing, that the savings account is actually not interest rate sensitive. At least we are experiencing that. So whether we were paying 4 or 5 or 7 or 3, in the 0 to 5 lakh now, we've emboldened and moved ahead and taken a call, now we did it. I don't know, this is not sensitivity. Money is just, you know, money is coming to us. Brand, I don't know, it's hard to pick what is exactly moving, but I think brand is strong now. And app is good, service is good. I think these things are more material than the rate now.
Interesting. Okay. And second question,
Hardik, I'd like to pause it just for a second, if you don't mind. Now, would you, if you were to take a, if you take a call now and say that, look, by the 2 years, 2 quarters, now you're going to struggle, or would you say, no, you'll be fine? What would be your guess as an analyst? For having dropped the rate to 3% up to 5 lakhs, what's your guess?
I mean, I don't know what your bucket movements are, to be honest. That's why the question.
No, no. When you drop rates so sharply, would you say that it's it would be we'll may find it difficult to raise deposits, or would you find that we'll be fine? What, as an outsider analyst, what would be your professional opinion for us?
Not really, right? Because still the rates are quite high, more than 5 lakhs, which is 7.25%. So as a customer, again, I would say that the depositors are still rate sensitive, the ones that we are holding. So when you actually drop the rates on the entire SA to 6%, that is when we will be able to see the real impact. That's how I would view it.
Got it. Thanks for that. Yeah. Okay. Your question?
Yeah. And second question is on the SMA, sir. If you could share the SMA 1, SMA 2 numbers for consumer loans and credit cards, the way that you have shared for JLG.
I don't think we have it ready offhand, explaining what the SMA for respective products are. But, okay. You know, overall numbers of, maybe Sudhan, you can ask the next question and I'll try to figure out if in the interim we can figure it out.
No, this was the only question I have.
No, no, I'm saying maybe Sudhanshu can, if you have the answer, you can fill in. Otherwise, I'll try to.
Yeah, so we generally don't give out product-specific numbers. While for JLG, we have called out for a reason, but we will give some of these numbers offline.
No, how can you give it offline? You can't give it offline, but the thing is that if you have it now, you give it, otherwise you don't give it.
So I don't have it handy, so we can give you handy.
But hopefully in the next maybe 5-10 minutes, by the time any other question goes through, if you find it, we'll tell it to you.
Okay, no worries. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vaidyanathan, sir, for closing comments.
Well, we discussed long enough, so I have no closing comments to make, except to say that thank you very much for being with us and through this discussion. It's a long one. And number two, if you can... if you can see how the bank has progressed, let me see, over the last few years, you can hopefully see this as an episodic thing. And, once a couple of quarters go through, then, even if you are even if you feel that the numbers are weaker this quarter, next quarter, weaker meaning the P&L sense. We don't expect balance sheet numbers to be weak. Okay. Even if you see it, I would say that don't be very disturbed because Q3 will come at us, Q4 will come. And then things will normalize and, life will be good after that. I mean, it will be good for the stage of the bank as it is today. And then you should track us to 26. We expect 25 to be similar to the zone of 24. But, we expect 26 to be a breakout year in terms of profitability. We expect 27 to be a breakout year for profitability. So 26, 27, 28, 29, we see a good runway the way we are looking, because of very simple fundamental logic that our costs will definitely slow down from here. I mean, cost increase will slow down from here. It maybe is 20 this year, maybe it's 18 or 17 year after that, and so on, and further down from there, and then income should rise. So basically, we should see the jaw opening. 26, 27, 28, 29 should be very materially improving years, and those of you who are with us through that cycle, you'll hopefully experience it with us. I have seen this before, running Capital First, and other organizations. So I'm expecting that cycle to come at us, in the good cycle to come at us in that window. So thank you, everybody. We want to just thank you for being with us. Thanks.
On behalf of ICICI Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.